टेक्स्ट 25
अव्यक्तोऽयम् अचिन्तोऽयम् अविकार्योऽयम् उच्यते तस्मादेवं विदित्वैनं ननु सुचित्तम् अर्हसि अव्यक्तोऽयम् अचिन्त्योऽयम् अविकार्योऽयम् उच्यते तस्मादेवं विदित्वैनं ननु सुचित्तम् अर्हसि
It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. As described previously, the magnitude of the soul is so small for our material calculation that he cannot be seen even by the most powerful microscope.
So common.
It's true, not the powerful microscope.
Therefore, he is invisible. As far as the soul's existence is concerned, no one can establish his existence experimentally beyond the proof of Shruti or Vedic wisdom.
So, note this one, right? You just, from here, it's very important. Yeah. Can continue.
We have to accept this truth because there is no other source of understanding the existence of the soul, although it is a fact by perception. There are many things we have to accept solely on the grounds of superior authority. No one can deny the existence of his father based upon the authority of his mother. There is no source of understanding the identity of the father except by the authority of mother. Sorry.
Okay, you can, yeah, you can stop there.
Okay.
So, did everybody get the point?
Yeah.
It's so wonderful. Actually, somebody asked, you know, like same thing. Somebody answered like same thing. When there was, you know, father and mother, when they came together to conceive a baby, right? They conceived a baby. At that time, the baby was not present. So how does the baby know? So once it comes out, it grows, right? A little bit grows and it becomes conscious. Does it still know that that's a father? Or, you know, it won't know until mother says it's your father. Because the baby was not present, right? During the conceiving period, the baby was not present. So we go based on the authority of the mother. Whatever mother says, if mother says, you know, you, like this is some other person, if he shows his father, baby will believe. That's how the authority. So for us, as Prabhupada is saying, we have to believe in Shruti or Vedas, like, you know, Vedic wisdom. Otherwise, we will never be able to understand on our own. That's what it, because the spirit soul, as we discussed, it's so tiny. How can we see? I don't know.
Ten thousand.
So how can we, you know?
Perceive.
It's impossible, actually. There's no. And all these microscope and all, it's designed by us.
Everybody's
playing some
Microsoft.
See, hearing is so important. If somebody says, you know, when you capture that word, it will stay for some time.
Should I
continue? Yes, Mother, please. Yeah, okay.
Similarly, there is no source of understanding the soul except by studying the Vedas. In other words, the soul is inconceivable by human experimental knowledge. The soul is consciousness and conscious. That also is the statement of the Vedas, and we have to accept that. Unlike the bodily changes, there is no change in the soul. As eternally unchangeable, the soul remains atomic in comparison to the infinite supreme soul. The supreme soul is infinite, and the atomic soul is infinitesimal.
Infinitesimal.
Therefore, the infinitesimal soul, being unchangeable, can never become equal to the infinite soul or the supreme personality of Godhead. This concept is repeated in the Vedas in different ways just to confirm the stability of the conception of the soul. Repetition of something is necessary in order that we understand the matter thoroughly without error.
Okay, so the two things here, right? So, supreme soul is infinite and atomic soul is infinitesimal. So what is infinitesimal? What's the general definition?
Tiny, very tiny.
Right? Very, very? It's almost immeasurable. Right? If you do that 1 by 10,000, right? That size of, right? It's almost, you cannot calculate, or you cannot measure it. And the super soul is infinite, it's so big. So I was just thinking, do anybody knows the age of Brahma? How long he lives?
311 trillion years.
311 trillion, 400 billion years.
Okay, I forgot 400 billion.
Yeah. you thought maybe it's a small number, right? 400 billion is a small number.
There's always this concept of rounding.
Round up.
Can we think of something like that, you know? At least I cannot grasp that 300.
So our national debt is approaching, so you just wait for
it. So then what about, that is Brahma's age. Then what about how can we conceive the Supreme, Bhagavan himself, right? Krishna himself. So at some point, you know, we all have to, at least whenever I see, you know, think of Brahma's age or something, you know, I feel very
tiny.
Insignificant and tiny. We are so tiny, we live just, you know, 100 years. And even we are not sure 100 years also, any time we can go, you know. But every time we try to use our, you know, the mind to understand lot of things. But we end up getting confused or bewildered most of the time. Unless you follow the Vedic scriptures, which is already, that's why it's, you know, it's, this Veda or scriptures is not experimental knowledge. We cannot take it and we cannot experiment it. It's called actually, what is the word? Aporushya, right? Which cannot be changed.
Yeah.
It's truth, always it remains truth. It cannot be changed.
Her voice is gone, Mataji.
Yeah, everything. So, Prabhupada here is saying that repetition of something is necessary in order to that we understand the matter thoroughly without error.
Mm.
Actually, many times you see, so many things will be repeating. Like we are soul, we are part and parcel of Krishna. We may feel like, oh, I already heard it, why, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because even in Bhagavatam, same concepts we are studying now. Same concepts are repeated, so our teacher emphasizes. So, you know, every 2 pages, Prabhupada gives the same point. Because we so much forget. We so much forget that we are part of Krishna, that, you know, we have to serve Him. Same points keep repeating again and again. So, we should not feel like, you know, as if... sometimes we feel that speaker cannot speak, so he's repeating himself. It's not like that. Even Krishna, same verses... Sometimes he repeats, like Manmana Bhava, that verse comes twice. Like some verses are there which he repeats.
Exactly same or little bit change?
Little bit change, but the...
Content and...
Yeah. And also we are saying, right, everything is consistent actually in Bhagavatam or in Bhagavad Gita also. Same, it's not never different. Like here it's like, let's say, you know, the creation or, you know, material elements. Everything is same. Like it's not like Bhagavad Gita, it gave a different knowledge. And in Bhagavatam, it's different. It's not like that. That's more detailed knowledge, but it's the same knowledge.
So is it true we always follow some authority?
That's how we learn stuff. Right? So it's the only way we learn.
Right?
Yeah.
School, right? We went to school. We didn't know anything, you know, ABCD or, you know, math or anything. But we had a faith in the teacher that they're going to teach us. Right? So we have the faith. It's inherited in us, actually, the faith. It's not that we, you know, have to get it from somewhere. We are built with that faith. It's just that, you know, we need to... Same thing with spiritual matters, right? If we don't believe in Bhagavad Gita or any authentic scriptures, then how are we going to get knowledge, spiritual knowledge? So somewhere we need to start. That's the...
Actually, people hesitate so much if we say, you know, believe Vedas, all these things. But actually, because why? Do we already have authority?
To what? Believe or not believe?
See, See, if somebody says, okay, take Vedas as your authority and take whatever it says, like, you know, like we are soul, we are part of Krishna, this our size is like this, our nature is to serve Krishna. Tell all this because it's all part of Vedas, take it. People challenge. Do you think, do we agree that, you know, they are following some authority already? Right?
Yeah.
What is that authority?
They are following whatever
they have learned, so.
Mostly science.
Right, yeah.
Mm. Mostly science.
Science is there.
And science also, if you go, it's not that whatever conclusion science gave, this each of the person has really seen it. Right?
They are building on
so
top
they
of
yeah, exactly. So yeah. That is also is built on assumptions. Right? Assumptions means like somebody said, somebody made a calculation.
Hypothesis.
G is equal to 9.8 or whatever, so we accept that.
We never experimented, right? Going and experimented.
It's not that every person...
It will never come also if you experiment.
But
we'll not reach
9.81. We need to be very careful when we say stuff like this. See, the problem is that if you try to talk to people like them, here is how they'll say it. You say that you cannot prove like G is equal to 9.81. Okay, you run your laboratory experiments. I have run that in my physics lab in 12th grade or in my first... So you do that, you get... Some within
close to that,
close to that, right? So it's not like you know you can. That's the equipment error that we and you know people have proved it over times. So I'll give you one small. I don't want to diverse, but the problem is that if we make statements
when
we
statement
talk with people,
is,
they will squash it.
No, statement is that these things are not. I'm not saying these are wrong.
Yeah.
I'm saying each and every person who believes this not necessarily. Has to see it through his own eyes to believe it. Like maybe some people who are scientifically educated, we have a chance to do experiments. But you know, small
not
kids
everybody.
In school or somebody else or older people, they just accept, okay, G is equal to 9.8, after this, you know, planets are like this or like that. Many things, we take it because we accept science as authority.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And most of the conclusions so far are inconsistent with Vedas. So it's okay. And some of them, they are coming closer to that. So what I'm saying is, if we go with the fact that, you know, seeing is believing, we are also failing in that aspect. There we don't challenge though.
No, actually seeing is believing to certain extent, because even science has Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So everything is uncertain in this world, and even that is uncertain, so kind of.
No, but the main point here is, you know, we want to bring out is, we have so strong faith in science.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, we
that's
already have
point.
An authority. When we say, you know, accept this new authority, then people challenge a lot. Because it's something new. It's like, oh, maybe, you know, they're trying to cheat us, or they're trying to pull us into something different, like,
because
from childhood,
yeah, we are not
we are brought
this.
Up with
yeah.
this faith in this science.
It's actually Renaissance, it's not science. Renaissance basically was a time when the world, at least the European world, changed from don't question, follow the Bible, to question everything, right? And that's the same culture that was, I mean, the same thing they brought with them to India as well. Like, it all is a way of thinking. So the way of thinking changed from here is scriptures, here is stuff, here is what God asked you to do, to, you know, hey, you know, don't, you know, forget all that. Let's ask, you know, what this question is.
Because a lot of the prosperity is also
right.
actually built on that basis of the platform.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I mean, isn't that Archimedes and Leonardo da Vinci,
yeah.
they are the times when, right?
But to go ahead.
Yeah, those are the times when a lot of the, you know, the developments happened. So that kind of formed the basis of a philosophy also, which is
yeah.
kind of the, I would say.
Yeah, so basically the point is, from childhood, we are trained in this. So we don't know anything but believing in this, right? See, from childhood we are taught Darwin's theory of creation.
That I had a question
right?
about that.
Yeah.
That how do they find like lot of, you know, remains and everything? You know, so how do they, how, I mean, the people would
like dinosaurs,
believe it.
Dinosaurs, no?
Yeah.
No, the remains?
Not the dinosaurs, but like they say that apes were our forefathers, you know, from them, you know, we convert into human beings
yeah.
into the present form, and then there are remains
but
of
there
it
is no proof,
beneath
right?
the earth.
There
like
no
they see,
no,
no they see all kind of like neothermal and all those, there are stages, and they see this like the
Meandre.
Structures and you know, yeah, whatever. That
so,
means, yeah.
so the process we any other religion comes is our religion only. You think about Ramayana, what it is. when you talk about Hanuman and all, they never did describe Hanuman as a monkey at all. It is like, you know, ape-like creatures is the closest you can give. And, you know, so we have something like that, that's there. The point is about with all these dinosaurs and things like that. I don't know what descriptions they are or what they are. But they are there, and you can see those bones. We cannot deny
them.
Yeah,
they may be living in
Egypt. All of these theories is also based on Darwin going to this, what is that, Galapagos Island. And basically observing, you know, how they have basically evolved. Okay, and ultimately, so what seeing is believing is what is the whole axiom based on which all of this theory has been made.
And the thing is, see, if instead of that theory, let's say from childhood we teach the kids, like, you know, we are from Krishna, we are born from Krishna, you know, we are souls from the beginning, all these things. As they grow up 25 years, actually they will have same questioning thing towards science. So it's all about how much we are from childhood conditioned to believe. Because all people all around us believe the same thing, so we think, okay, this is what we need to believe. But actually it is said the Krishna consciousness is so much in the Indians that science, let's say there is Darwin's exam, right? Exam they have to write. That day they go to Ganapati and pray and, you know.
Before going to exam.
It's an atheistic subject. But, you know, they pray to God to pass in the exam. So,
you know, that is the reason why there are cults also here, right? I mean, there will be small cults and all, like, you know, James Brown and all. Remember, like, he was in an island, he basically had a few of the following, and they said, we are going to do suicide. Everybody agreed to that because that's how they were tuned and all. So, it's at the end of the day, it's the mind which is kind of, it tells that, okay, this is, let me follow this, then you just go ahead and follow that, right? So, anyway.
So, actually, recently we heard that some scientist lady, she said, I discovered that, you know, we are all born from a rat, special rat.
Did anybody hear that latest
discovery? Special rat, and even the monkey, which Darwin is saying, it's also coming from this rat.
It's
so, you know, she's not contradicting what Darwin is saying, but, you know, she's like going
a pretty bit short. She's very famous and popular scientist. So she found out we all came from
now she's trying to convince
gene mapping.
So that's how it's people. And our teacher was telling, like,
so which is good, right? I mean, in the sense that, okay, that means we are in a low form of consciousness at one point of time.
See, evolution is there. It's not Darwin's type of evolution. Okay. Evolution is there.
Okay, let's talk about what is our the way of evolution we know.
Yeah. So
according to scriptures, what evolution we have?
So what's in evolution in Krishna consciousness or Vedic?
So we get from lower consciousness to the higher consciousness, right? So if you are like, if you have done really bad some stuff, you know, then you are born and like who have like standard karma balance? They don't have a karma balance for the start with. And then you are very fortunate to get a human life because then you get the path to.
So it's not like one species was there, first species converted into another species.
See, Darwin's
all species are existing, but within that the soul moves.
Yeah.
Right? Once we were a monkey, later we became a tree.
But
later
Darwin's
we became
theory and Krishna don't need to be in conflict. I mean, in a way that, you know.
No, it's a big time conflict. Big time
conflict. No, they say.
No, wait, so the higher being, that is the monkey, actually evolved over time and it became something that became more conscious.
No,
that's not the
understanding.
He's saying that, you know, evolution meaning like, you know,
body changes.
Yeah, body changes with years and with.
It's not the monkey became human being.
Yeah.
See, it's not the ape is always there. It's always existing now also, right? You can find the monkeys. So they are always there. That species always there.
You cannot
there.
Say this monkey after 10 years will become a human being.
After 10 million years, monkey transformed into human being. So
but
that's
even,
a Darwin's.
Even in Krishna consciousness, there is like every animal. Soul can mean every animal too, right?
Yes, I
mean,
that's correct.
Soul can be anything.
Yes. Yeah, that's
soul
correct.
Can be an ape
so soul has changed from an ape to a human being.
Yeah, so basically, the soul changed from the ape to the human being and there is nothing that is in conflict because...
He didn't. So what's his Darwin theory? What does he clearly say? What does he say?
Wait, the Vedic scriptures don't say that... Darwin basically said that living things evolve over time and then
and
they adapt themselves
of the
because of... Survival of the fittest, and there's two things. Survival of the fittest and genetic mutation.
Yeah.
Genetic mutation is that the form changes to adapt itself, and they get different kinds of, the different types of organisms that develop. And the ones that survive are the fittest to survive in that thing. The ones which are not fit actually die and perish, and they can't really go in.
So, did ape perish?
Apes sort of did not perish. Gorillas and those things are apes.
No, they are there. Yeah. The species is there.
Yeah.
So, then, how does the Vedic view fits into that one?
the Vedic, I'm thinking sort of fits because...
No, the main fundamental difference is they say change in the body without change in the... without taking birth. That's the difference. But in our case, there is change in the body by taking rebirth. Got it? The monkey soul...
Even the ape could have gone into some tree, for example.
The ape is an ape. The ape, when it's born an ape, it will actually be an ape. The ape's progeny, the next ape, will actually be lose less hair, become look more like a human being.
Genetic
mutation. Genetic mutation is a part of Darwin's thing, like which is that the ape changes.
Yeah, so that's what is contradicting
so,
to the.
So a counter argument of this could be okay. Why get if monkeys evolved into human being, why are we still seeing monkeys around?
That
could be a very good
comment.
All
these cases were interesting.
That's okay. Yeah, leave it. We are not arguing about that.
There are no more dinosaurs now, right?
No.
It should be there, right?
What? Do we know whether the dinosaurs really existed?
I don't know. There are bones out there.
I heard somewhere, you know, they didn't even exist. In first place, I heard that one actually. In one of the articles, somebody.
It's possible people create some bones.
No, really, I heard that actually. I read that.
I mean, okay, yeah. I mean, people can say.
Yeah, people say the dragon. So many.
No, not dragon.
But you got fossils and all. For
yeah, fossils are there. So
fossils are there.
So
fossils.
The main point was that you know authority point, right?
Yeah,
that's the thing. So we already have some authority. So that's why we don't accept new authority.
So anyway,
unless
without authority, this is what happens. It creates more confusion.
Correct.
That's the whole point. And we know according to our scriptures, its evolution is there, but the evolution of the consciousness. So the living entity, once you lose your human form, right? If you don't take advantage of the human form, you will be pushed into lowest the stage or whatever, you know, it starts from, right? We have the picture. So from there, it evolves, the consciousness evolves. And there is no chance for you to, you know, immediately jump into human being. You have to go through the cycle. Unless, you know, some pure devotee or somebody, like their mercy, yes, you can, you know, take human form again. If they pray, like Narada Muni, right, he travels around, you know, different planetary systems. Patala, everywhere he travels. So whenever any living entities come across him, they will get blessings. And they take birth as, you know, heavenly planets or whatever. So...
You said like when we come down to earth, so do we first take human form and then based on the karma we go back to a lower?
Yeah, it seems we all first become a Brahma.
Brahma?
So we all become Brahma.
We made a mistake and came down?
No, we from the spiritual world we made a mistake, right?
Okay, then we became
then
a Brahma.
First, yeah, first life we take is as a Brahma.
So again we make mistake, that's why we came in.
Then after that some Brahmas actually are pure devotees, they can go back.
Okay.
If they realize their mistakes,
then
if we
still,
didn't realize,
yeah, then
we
keep come
coming
back.
Down.
So coming
one
down.
One
going down.
Yeah. So we all were Brahmas.
And there were millions of planets. It's not just one universe. So it can be many Brahmas.
We were Brahma. Now it is so difficult.
There is one pastime. I don't know whether we discussed. How was the starting point, Prabhu? Like Brahma, like four-headed Brahma, he goes once to visit Krishna, right? Dwaraka.
No, that Brahma vimuts
past. No, not that. Okay, so Brahma comes to see Krishna. Krishna is in this earthly planet, right? So our Brahma, the Brahma of our universe has four heads. Other Brahmas have many heads. Because there are
many
intelligent Brahmas. So then he comes to see Krishna. At the door, like the doorkeeper asks, like, okay, what should I tell Krishna? Like, you tell Krishna that, you know, Brahma has come. Then Krishna goes inside, the keeper goes inside and asks Krishna. Then Krishna says, which Brahma is it?
So many
Brahma. Then he goes back and he tells which Brahma. Then he doesn't understand. Then he comes inside. Then they say, Krishna, you know, I told I'm Brahma. You asked, like, you know, which Brahma, what is, I didn't understand. Then immediately Krishna calls Brahmas of all the universes, Indras and all Shivas, everybody to come. And the photo, if you can see, some Brahmas have like multiple tiers of heads, so big, and our Brahma is so small, like that. Based on the service, they are given that much body. Then he becomes bewildered and he understood that, you know, I am just Brahma, one universe. There are many universes, many Brahmas.
Basically, we are all five. Infinitesimal, that's mm-hmm. the whole thing. Yeah, the whole thing.
So, not even we, even Brahma is infinitesimal.
Yeah.
If Brahma is like that, you can imagine. It's okay, 25, text 25. So, then let's go to text 26. अतः चैनम नित्यजातम् नित्यं वा मनसि मृतम् तथापि त्वं महाबाहो नैनं शोचितं हर्षि अतः चैनम नित्यजातम् नित्यं वा मनसि मृतम् तथापि त्वं महाबाहो नैनं शोचितं हर्षि. So in this, so far, you know, Krishna was giving the perspective of the soul, right? He was talking about the spiritual,
shastric
point of view. Now he is going to talk of a worldly point of view. So even if you don't think soul as a spirit, spiritual, if you just think it as a material thing, which takes birth and which dies, so what happens in that case? So Krishna is going to, because Krishna wants to cover all angles, you know, whatever he wants to cover, all the angles, different angles to do that. Okay.
So, worldly point of view is assuming body is made of chemicals. Let's assume, for say, for a second, the body is made of chemicals. Still, there is no reason for Arjuna to lament if he kills them. Why? So that's what Prabhupada is going to explain.
If, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life will always be born and die forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty arm. There is always a class of philosophers, almost akin to the Buddhists, who do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. When Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophers existed, and they were known as the Lokayaptikas and
Vaibhashikas.
Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at a certain mature condition of material combination. The modern material scientists and materialist philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage, the life symptoms developed by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. The science of anthropology is based on this philosophy. Currently, many pseudo-religions, now becoming fashionable in America, and are also adhering to this philosophy, as are the nihilistic... nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects.
What do you have, Mataji?
As are is more appropriate.
No, but if you say are also adhering to this philosophy, then in that case, it's appropriate to say as well as you are adhering to the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects, right?
No. They are actually saying many pseudo-religions,
yeah,
including the Buddhist sects, are adhering to this,
yeah,
philosophy.
Yeah.
So
and
that's
they are also adhering to the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects, right?
No. Saying that...
Similar
meaning.
Yeah, yes. So many pseudo-religions, yeah, now becoming fashionable in America, are also adhering to this philosophy.
As well as...
As are the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects. So basically,
the philosophy...
They are both.
Like
both.
Yeah, both of them are adhering to this.
So the book, the meaning changes a bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you change the words around, you just change the
meaning.
This is
your
important.
That may be more accurate,
yeah. This argument given by Krishna is even more forceful. Don't lament for the
So what does
nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist that mean here?
There
yeah,
is two sects of Buddhism, Hinayana and Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
Hinayana form, this was this nihilistic. Maybe I'm flipping it, but one is the nihilistic.
By nihilistic, what do you mean?
That means that, you know, born, you even if you meditate on nothingness, and you merge into this nothingness, and there is nothing else for you. You're born, you're dead.
Basically, neiti, there is nothing. They say all that.
And Mahayana is worshipping Buddha himself as God, trying to gain that knowledge. So that's, yeah. I don't think they call it Hinayana now. Hinayana means small. So no, they call it Theravada, I think. So
So what does main points in this
We understand this philosophy, right? This type of philosophy.
This is Mayavadi, like.
No, this philosophy is pretty much predominant now, right? Material scientists think. How do they think life came? Life came from matter?
Matter.
Yeah, so that's the principle they have.
So Big Bang theory.
Huh?
Big Bang theory
and suddenly all chemicals came together and suddenly life started.
Prabhu, the anthropology here is actually a bit of a confusing thing. Anthropology is about studying human societies,
human society, right?
And how they evolved and stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is not a sort of a science. It's, I mean, in that sense, it's more of a Big Bang. It doesn't have Big Bang and those kind of things.
Yeah, no, I'm just giving out the
The
human form. Came.
Yeah, so
that's
chemical,
how chemical, right?
Yeah, the
they
chemical
came together.
Thing is correctly mentioned, like, and yeah, so.
Yeah, we don't know. I don't know what context Prabhupada is referring anthropology here.
But he's saying that anthropology is basically the study of social behavior, and the social behavior
is based on
this interaction of the chemical and the physical elements. So that, I think that's how the anthropology
So there is no existence of soul in that discussion. Anthropology
does not
concern
soul at all.
Yeah, that's what
you're saying
here.
That's what Prabhupada is saying.
It's based on that.
Yeah,
but anyway, foundation is wrong, then we can understand whatever we try to do.
But there is more reading after that, right?
Yeah.
More clarification.
So now, what Fisher is saying is, if we assume that life came from matter, still, there is nothing to lament. So that's what it's going to be asserted in the next paragraph.
So in the second sentence, says that when Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophers existed.
Okay. They are also during that time, his time also.
So that's why he wanted to defeat at that time.
Even his time, there were people who were atheists.
So they were called as the Lokayatikas and the
Vaibhashikas. Who said that life came from matter.
Even if Arjuna did not believe in the existence of the soul, as in the Vaibhashika philosophy, there would still have been no cause for lamentation. No one laments the loss of a certain bulk of chemicals and stops discharging his prescribed duty.
It's so worthless, right?
Yeah.
So then what's the point?
On the other hand, in modern science and scientific welfare,
warfare.
So many tons of chemicals are wasted by
warfare,
achieving victory over the enemy.
Warfare.
According to the Vaibhashika philosophy, the so-called soul or atma vanishes along with the deterioration of the body. So in any case, whether Arjuna accepted the Vedic conclusion that there is an atomic soul or he did not believe in the existence of the soul, he had no reason to lament. According to this theory, since there are so many living entities generating out of matter every moment, and so many of them are being vanquished every moment, there is no need to grieve for such incidents. If there were no rebirth for the soul, Arjuna had no reason to be afraid of being affected by sinful reactions due to his killing his grandfather and teacher.
That's very important.
Yeah. But at the same time, Krishna sarcastically addressed Arjuna as Mahabahu, mighty arm, because he at least did not accept the theory of the Vaibhashikas, which leaves aside the Vedic wisdom. As a Kshatriya, Arjuna belonged to the Vedic culture, and it behooved him to continue to follow its principles.
So this paragraph kind of seems to connote that Arjuna is using the Vaivashika's philosophy for lamenting because
Krishna is giving a different. First, he explains saying, you know, if we are all soul, then you don't need to lament because soul anyway takes rebirth.
Yeah.
Now he's telling, okay, that's Shastri point of view, right? That's a Vedic point of view. He's saying, just assume, let's say, even if not from this point of view, even if you believe that, you know, soul came from matter, even then, you cannot escape your duty.
Okay.
But then at the end, he says again, Mahabahu, or in the verse, he says Mahabahu, because Krishna knows Arjuna is not the one who follows this Vaibhashika's philosophy. He follows Vedic wisdom anyway. But this is for us, like in general. So somebody may come and argue, okay, what if I believe it's matter? Soul came from matter, right? So Krishna is covering all grounds, as Prabhu was saying. So why there is no reason for lamentation if we believe soul came from matter? There are two reasons, right?
Go ahead. It's just chemical, so what is wrong if you just do something to a chemical?
But there is no concept of rebirth.
Exactly. That's the second point. Two points.
No reactions.
One is chemical, so it's worthless.
Yeah.
So it's like as if chemicals form something and you destroy that form, still there is no this thing. And the second point Prabhu was telling,
because there is no rebirth, so you don't need to lament also, right? I mean, everything will anyway evaporate.
So no sinful reactions also in that case.
Because
it's not like you stopped.
No karma.
Yeah.
No karma.
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about
if you have rebirth only then you'll get karma. If
if you don't believe in karma, then you don't have to worry about rebirth or anything, right? It's just, you do whatever you want to
even
do.
Even Arjuna can do anything, and still he doesn't have rebirth, so he doesn't have to face the reactions.
There's no simple reactions.
Yeah.
And Arjuna was he was Aryan. That means he was a cultured. So that's why, you know, that's why he was afraid of sinful reactions. Because he follows Vedic culture. Right? Vedic culture. We know according to Vedas, we get karma. So Arjuna already know that. That's why, you know, he follows, he belonged to the Vedic culture. He was Aryan.
But that sinful reactions can be in this life also, right? Though
it
is chemicals. But
no, actually it's both ways. One is Arjuna doesn't retake rebirth. But the other one is, because the soul itself doesn't have rebirth, even if you destroy it, you are not going to face reactions.
Yeah, but Arjuna's basis of the sinful reaction was the dharma.
That's correct. Yeah, in this context,
In this context,
see, the point is, if in last six lines from the purport, bottom, Prabhupada says, if there were no rebirth for the soul, Arjuna had no reason to be afraid of being affected by sinful reactions due to his killing his grandfather and teacher.
Okay, text 26.
Yeah, but that point remains, like, because of prematurely terminating that life, Arjuna may still have to face the reactions, and in this life he could face.
I think we have discussed most of, you know, all this chemical, all this, you know, we already discussed most of it.
So it's actually very... if you just talk about it to your parents or something, like, you know, what happens if I die, it becomes like very... you're just chemicals, you know.
Then we cannot even have relationships, right?
Yeah.
It's all if you're chemicals.
There is this thing
called
emotion,
which
just
kind of
overrides everything.
Yeah, you will not have any emotion. I think we're all made of chemicals.
But this concept actually helps when you have a fight with your wife.
I don't care about it.
All chemicals.
It's all chemicals.
It seems my friend.
Be careful, don't tell
them. He has traveled a lot of places. He's one of the rare Americans. He said, I have found one universal truth in this thing. If mama is not happy in the family, no one is happy in the family. Better remember that.
Did I tell? I think I shared with all of you, right? Especially, you know, in the mom. Yeah. So basically, you know, I think ladies are compared to
Elephant.
I remember that.
You remember. I think I shared with you, but
yeah,
did I share with all of you?
Class.
Okay, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that's okay.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I
don't
remember.
You remember, yeah. So basically, they're considered, you know, they're compared to elephants. So elephants, they remember everything clearly. Whatever, you know, they've done to them. No, they may express in their way.
So after years later, they will say, you said this.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
No, that is true.
That's true, that is true.
That is
true.
Look at all the gems.
So, if you treat them nicely, no, at home, especially, you know, that's why women, right? We are there. We need to respect them. Otherwise, if you protect them and if you respect them more, so they can help you progress spiritually.
Yeah,
they become yoga maya. They act as yoga maya. But if we don't, you know, protect and if you don't treat, if you using harsh word, all those things, if you do that, then they become mahamaya. So mahamaya is very powerful. It holds you down to the material nature.
When we are describing wife as Maya, bro.
Yoga Maya is good.
Also, I am getting you in trouble.
No, Yoga Maya is good.
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah.
Yoga Maya is good. It will help you.
Mahamaya is who keeps you like with the
material.
Yeah. Durga Devi.
Yeah.
Durga Devi.
Yoga Maya is who takes you.
Yeah.
We'll go to text 27.
One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament.
Right? Krishna is repeating to just convince Arjuna.
It's applicable for office, I'm sorry.
Purpose.
Discharge your duty.
Yeah. One has to take birth according to one's activities of life. And after finishing one term of activities, one has to die to take birth for the next. In this way, one is going through one cycle of birth and death after another without liberation. The cycle of birth and death does not, however, support unnecessary murder, slaughter and war. But at the same time, violence and war are inevitable factors in human society for keeping law and order. The battle of Kurukshetra, being the will of the Supreme, was an inevitable event, and to fight for the right cause is the duty of the Kshatriya. Why should he be afraid of or aggrieved at the death of his relatives, since he was discharging his proper duty? He did not deserve to break the law, thereby becoming subjected to the reactions of sinful acts, of which he was so afraid. By avoiding the discharge of his proper duty, he would not be able to stop the death of his relatives, and he would be degraded due to the selection of the wrong path of action.
So in this, Krishna is very clearly saying, even if Arjuna doesn't kill the Kauravas, anyway they are going to die. Because one who takes birth is sure to die.
But does he get different karma if he didn't do his duty?
Who, Arjuna?
Yep.
Of course, if he doesn't do, then he is going to get a bad reaction. If he doesn't listen to Krishna, Krishna is ordering, right, to fight. So if he doesn't fight, that means he is going against the will of the Supreme Lord. Then he is going to get reactions for that. But if he follows...
Okay.
So in the last, last sentence, right? By avoiding the discharge of his proper duty, he would not be able to stop the death of his relatives and he would be degraded due to selection of wrong path of action. So does it apply to all of us? For in this case, the duty of Arjuna is to fight, right? But we can also put, you know, we can wear the same shoes here. What's our duty now? If you take it now, at this point of time, what's our duty? What should be our main duty or main goal of all of us?
At this point of time, it is to
yeah,
be
just take it
in
right
this
there.
Car, in this class.
Bro is already
like
next.
The Microsoft performance.
Okay, what should be goal of all of us? What should be our goal, main goal?
Return to God.
So we know that's a goal, right? To go back to God. Or, no?
But Arjuna was lucky. Krishna himself was present and telling, but we have to believe.
Yeah, so this is non-different from Krishna.
Okay.
Because why? Why is Bhagavad Gita is non-different from Krishna?
It's Krishna's words actually.
Sung by Krishna. So it's non-different from Krishna. And actually we have even more information by, you know, Srila Prabhupada and previous Acharyas. We cannot, and if somebody gives you just the Sanskrit, 700 verses to you, what will you understand? We'll never understand anything. We'll never even relate things.
We'll get up and sleep.
So in this way, at least, you know, previous Acharyas and all, they have, you know, dissected the whole thing. And to apply for us, they have given. So Krishna's duty was to surrender to Krishna and fight in a war. Arjuna's. So in this case, for us, we have a goal to surrender to, you know, to follow the path of devotional service. So are we doing it? I was just thinking when I wanted to prepare for this, I read this and immediately the thing it stuck to me was, are we really doing anything to follow our prescribed duty? If we are not doing, like Arjuna, if he doesn't want to fight, what's going to happen if he doesn't fight?
Sinful reactions.
He's going to occur sinful reactions. So, is it true for us also if we don't follow
Vedic principles?
Yeah.
So, are we going to get reactions?
Yes.
Yeah. We can't handle
probably
regular reactions.
Yes.
No. I was going to say we can't handle our regular reactions. It's sinful reactions is even more problem.
No, we do get sinful reactions too. Why do you?
Past karma.
Not even past, in this life,
yeah.
We do get sinful reactions. Why do we get sinful reactions?
If we don't follow the duty.
Well, because we are not passing.
There are a lot of bad things that happen to good people. Like someone gets into an accident, you get some disease, something happens and you're kind of, why did this happen to me, right? I mean, those are sinful reactions because it's not something that you control or you want.
Yes, so basically even when we breathe,
we kill something.
So we kill a lot of living entities. And they are also spirit soul. It's just that we don't see it. They are so small, tiny. So when we breathe, when we walk outside,
right.
We step on ants. That means we are literally, you know, we are killing them actually. So if you are not in devotional service, right? That means
you have to pay for it.
We have to pay for it. Even it may be ant actually, but you are killing it. So you are getting the same reaction as somebody killing the human being. It's the same reaction. It's not different. But when we use it, like for example, we are all coming to temple. So we are coming for? To practice devotional service. That means you are not accruing in. So on the path you are climbing here stairs, you kill some ants and all. That means it is no reaction for you. But the same thing if you do, you know, you go for maybe, you know, like a movie theater or something, right? Movie theater you go. Then you kill ants and all, for sure you are accruing the karma.
So, but we are not in temple all the time. So, I mean, we do our course of duty.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Then, does it like, you know, it nets?
So that's why. What's your intention? Whatever activities consciousness you have, that depends what reaction you are going to get. So, if you are going to lead your life to become Krishna consciousness or to goal, you know, I have that goal. That means you will never accrue any reactions because whatever you eat. You walk, you go to shopping, right? You have to go to shopping to buy some stuff. That means you kill a lot of things, but you will never accrue. Because you are going to cook, you offer, you eat. So you will never get any reactions. Right? You all getting... That's
so
where I'm going.
Overall, what is your goal of life? And are you sincerely molding your life according to that? Then to that extent, you will be protected from reactions.
You will be... For sure, you will be protected. Does it make sense? I was just thinking when I read this one. This is for Arjuna, but for us, what is it from this particular, you know, the purport we can get? Don't be afraid that, you know, it's a gradual progress. Krishna sees only the sincere desire or the effort he sees. he doesn't see the result, you know, saying, you know, you didn't achieve this, you didn't achieve this, so you're going to get reaction. He never sees that. Just that consciousness that you're, you know, you're going to sincerely put that effort to become Krishna consciousness, that's all Krishna cares. Then, anyway, as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can direct the material nature or Durga Devi to put, you know, stop on your karma. That's what happens actually. When you take up, you're on the spiritual platform. Whenever we discuss something, we're always on the spiritual platform. So the reactions doesn't act on us. Because we're all protected under, you know, Yoga Maya. But when same thing, you know, if you take something, you know, like some magazine which doesn't really, you know, every day it changes, the subject changes, newspaper, all this thing. So if you argue on that, if you waste time, all those things, then of course, you know, Krishna will not protect us. He will be on our own, under the control of the modes of nature.
So it is said that we are either in Maya or in Krishna. It's not, there is no middle ground. We cannot say, okay, now I'm not really doing Krishna conscious, but I'm safe. If we are not really doing Krishna conscious service, that means we are actually serving Maya. Maya means through our senses, basically. So that's all. There is no middle ground.
And work, everything, whatever activities we do every day, we can always connect to
Krishna.
It's not that, you know, some activities are not Krishna consciousness. Some morning you get up, you go to work, you know, you come back, take care of family, you work, everything can be connected. There is nothing, you know, it can be independent of Krishna consciousness. It can be used, it can be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. At least that's what I thought. That was a good proof or explanation on that one. So we'll go to text 28. Any questions?
अव्यक्तानि भूतानि व्यक्तानि भारत अव्यक्तानि धामिमेव तत्र परिमेव अव्यक्तानि भूतानि व्यक्तानि धामिमेव भारत अव्यक्तानि धामिमेव तत्र परिमेव
All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their entering state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Purport. Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in existence of soul and the other not believing in the existence of the soul, there is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheist by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet, even if for argument's sake we accept this atheistic theory, there is still no cause of lamentation. Apart from separate existence of the soul, the material element remains unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of non-manifestation comes manifestation. Just as from ether, air is generated, from air fire is generated, and from fire water is generated, and from water earth becomes manifested. From the earth many varieties of manifestations take place. Take for example a big skyscraper manifested from the earth. When it is manifested,
dismantled,
the manifestation become again unmanifested and remains as atoms in the ultimate state. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in course of time things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. Then what cause is there for lamentation, either in the stage of manifestation or in unmanifestation? Somehow or other, either in unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, the elements remain unmanifested, and only in the middle are they manifested. And this does not make any real material difference.
So what?
So much.
What words did you learn? Two words, right?
It's like the perplexed
perplexity
saga.
Postponeness. I can't follow that whole apart from this certain stage of that whole sentence. I do not follow.
So, how what does unmanifest and manifest?
It was not there. It's there.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be.
And what example Prabhupada gives over
the
there?
Building.
Sky.
Right?
Building. Yeah, that's fine, Prabhupada.
That's right. No, I'm just trying to clarify the.
Yeah.
So everything is in a cycle. What is the kind of subtle.
No, this is still the worldly. Worldly.
It's still
view.
Covering the worldly
view.
Perspective.
That, you know, we are made of chemicals. Still, that point of view. That point of view, initially it started with raw elements. At some point it came a form. And at the end of it, they become again formless.
When you get killed, again it goes back to.
So it starts with unmanifest. It manifests for some time, and then again it becomes unmanifest. So that's the worldly view. So in that case, in the for some time, if there is a form and manifestation, why we should lament? Because at the end of it also, elements are going to be there. It's not like it's lost, because the raw elements where from where it started, it's already there. Because the law of conservation of energy is there.
It converts from one form
to
another.
Yeah, exactly.
It cannot be lost. Destroyed.
It cannot be created. It cannot be.
Yes,
destroyed.
Yes.
Yeah, it's always there. The
so that's why there is no reason to lament.
The human being is a manifested soul.
Huh?
The body.
Yeah,
the material body.
Little
from
body
the material element.
Body,
yeah, from all the material elements.
Yeah.
Once we die, again it all degenerates, you know, right? Go back to the same material element. Ultimate that material element.
So that's okay.
Unless you guys have some confusion or something, but that's all the whole thing. That's about manifest and manifest.
Mm.
Okay. And if we accept the Vedic conclusion as stated in Bhagavad Gita that these material bodies are perishable in due course of time. Antavanta ime deha. But that the soul is eternal. Nitya yokta
sharirena.
Then we must remember always that the body is like a dress. Therefore, why lament the changing of dress? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the eternal soul. It is something like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting on a chariot as a king. But when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of non-existence of the material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in the existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of soul, there is no cause for lamentation for the loss of body.
So the second paragraph is the Vedic wisdom point of view, right? So in Vedic wisdom point of view, we know from Bhagavad Gita that material body is perishable and the soul is eternal, right? So in that case, how is body compared to the soul?
Dress.
It's like a dress, changing dress, that verse Krishna said, right? As the person removes the old garments, did we cover that already?
Yeah.
One of the 500 verses. As he gives up old garments, he takes up new garments, the soul takes a new body. Like that, right? And it's like, and when compared to the soul, the material body is actually no factual existence. It's like a dream. Taking a body or, you know, taking a form in the dream. And then finally, it's not at all there. So in either cases, like one, whether we believe in the soul or not believe in the soul, there is no lamentation for the loss of the body.
There is so much lament everywhere. Like, I mean, every page there is, like you said, every page there is super soul and supreme. But actually, there is no, every page there is lamentation.
Because Arjuna was lamenting so much.
You only mentioned the emotion.
Yeah.
That's what we think about. We know all this stuff, but emotion is what binds us. I think lamentation comes out of that only, right? And that's the reason.
And also, that's he's addressing Arjuna, right?
Yeah.
Arjuna is lamenting, I don't want to fight.
Yeah.
So Krishna is convincing, you don't have to worry about anything.
But then there is a lot of different words for lamentation that has been used as well. Like in this case, it was Parivedana. Right, in the previous. Yeah, that's what it is. Parivedana is lamentation.
Oh, lamentation, okay.
Yeah.
Paridevana.
Paridevana.
That's my concern.
Yeah.
And in 27, what is the word for lamentation?
Sochitam.
I was thinking.
Both are like 26 and 27 is repeated.
Yeah, in the C, for example, 26 and 27.
Sochitam is to lament. So it's a verb form of lamentation.
Sochitam is used everywhere. Like,
think.
See, 26 and 27, they end with the same line. Almost. Nainam sochitam arhasi, nathvam sochitam arhasi.
Oh, yeah.
And then here
he
says Parivedana.
Yeah, because Arjuna is really lamenting, so Krishna is trying to convince him.
Yeah. So the next verse is called Amazing Verse. We'll discuss that in next class. Because it's, if you see, it's all about amazing.
Yeah,
some look on the soul as amazing, some describe the soul him as amazing, some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. So this is the amazing words.
It's called amazing words.
It's better than perplexing or
manifest, unmanifest.